The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, will AI change how we treat our pets? Well, joining me to talk about AI in veterinary medicine is the vet at Nutgrove Veterinary Hospital, Dara O'Hanlon, and you can find Dara online at The Topical Vet. Dara, you're welcome back to the programme. Do you use AI now in your work?
Yes, it's getting that way. So vets, we've never been shy about technology. So things like X-rays, MRI, they're all obviously commonly used now, but once upon a time we had to embrace them. And AI is yet another technological tool. It's particularly good at analysing vast quantities of data and extracting patterns from that. And hopefully we'll get a chance to touch on how AI can be of benefit to owners of animals and also how it impacts us as vets. And even just one very succinct example as to how it's changed our mindset on one disease in particular.
Okay, well, tell us about that then. What disease?
Well, the disease, believe it or not, was heat stroke. So what we used to think was that, say with heat stroke, the common advice that was given was just don't have your animal in a car because obviously the temperatures there get quite hot. But vets, a lot of the time we were conscious that we were seeing cases, not so much for instance of dogs trapped in cars. That's very dramatic when it happens. But we were seeing quite commonly it was dogs, more so exercise, more so certain breeds. And thankfully, what has happened is that when you analyse vast quantities of data from lots of clinics across Britain, AI is able to take those clinical notes, extract data from it. And now we know that we have a percentage now. So we know 75% of heat stroke illness in dogs is actually related to exercise, not to being trapped in a car. Trapped in a car is only 5%. And because of that now, lots of the messaging around times of heat stroke is going to be much more so about avoiding exercise on hot sunny days. And obviously we had three very, very hot days there last week. We know in Ireland, traditionally, July is the hottest month of the year. So particularly salient advice. And even then in terms of breeds, we wouldn't have many of these ones, but say the top breed that came out from that big meta-analysis of data, which was underpinned by AI, was actually the Chow Chow, like much, much more likely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So when it comes to diagnosis then, you have access, or vets have access to a lot more data. So the likelihood of what you're seeing in this particular animal, of it being X, you can see that that is increased given the symptoms and what AI is telling you based on the experience of other vets internationally.
Yeah, it's tricky. Like that side of things is there's not as much information because my understanding is the AI relies on data that's given to it. And say if you take the example of the average Irish veterinary practice, like you still might have a practice where they're recording their notes on, say, you know, cue cards, you know, the Rolodex.
Yes, system. They're just writing it down. So you're not going to have access to that.
Exactly. And then you'll have bigger branches of veterinary practices where maybe their notes are going to be within the same software. So it does depend on the quality of the data. But you're absolutely right. It should be able to extract trends that will be geographically distinct. Mm-hmm. Certain demographics will, you know, for example, older dogs, younger dogs, female, male dogs, certain breeds, in particular breed-related illnesses, so genetically based disease, that's something that we're likely to see more targeted testing for.
Okay. In Asia, though, pet owners are using apps, aren't they? And they're using AI to diagnose their pets. Is that something that vets go, oh, God, here we go, Dr. Google to the power of 10?
Yeah, well, I don't mind it myself. I mean, like there's some really good examples of AI. So, for example, when we had Ukrainian clients coming over, initially, there might have been a language barrier. And then all of a sudden you had like live translation. I thought I was living in Star Trek, but, you know, they'd be talking to you and it would be verbally translating at the same time what they were saying. So it was relatively effortless communication. So that's a massive benefit for both the owner and the vet. As well as that, then there's nothing wrong. Like even, for example, my own mother, she has an excellent memory. And say, for example, if she had to bring her cat to the vet, but she wasn't unable to make it, she might be able to use AI to summarize her history so that it's succinctly brought by someone else. And then it's a lot easier to parse through all the relevant data. And that's a very, very good example. And sometimes in particular language barriers, it can be that AI will help to highlight the important points from an owner. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of whether or not you're talking about small animals or even large animals like cattle or horses, there are probably going to be great changes there. So you take, you know, sticking with the concept of data, you look at dairy farming, like that's largely data driven, like a huge amounts of data. And even up until now, before the advent of AI, you had collars that had pedometers in them. They also had a radio frequency tag so that if that animal is on a particular diet, when it goes up to get its rations, a certain amount are dispensed, things like that. So, you know, not averse to data, but things will change even more. So I think Charles Darwin said that facial expression is the shared universal language of all animals. And certainly that's true. So you talk now about the utilization of AI, the say in Asia using apps and things like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be just for health reasons. There's a really good example of an app where it will take the facial features of your dog. If, heaven forbid, it goes missing or something like that, you're able to upload its features onto the cloud. And next thing, it will be able to analyze local shelters for your missing dog without necessarily needing to use a microchip. Now, this can be controversial. I think there was the Ring doorbell. They had a search party app. Mm-hmm. And this would have meant that, say, if one of your dogs went loose, that it would have automatically been searching throughout all the Ring doorbells for this particular dog's facial expression.
And there's privacy concerns around that.
Yeah.
But you're saying that we're only really at the start of this when it comes to how it'll be used in veterinary. But you don't have concerns that people will be more likely to diagnose their pets themselves, or are you?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because ultimately, if it is that they are bringing an animal to us for veterinary care, you know, they're trusting us as professionals. And I think ultimately the clinical diagnosis is going to rest with the professional, like with any profession. I'd also say that to examine an animal properly does require a clinical examination. And there's only so much that technology will be able to aid you with that. And we saw some limitations of that during COVID when we were trying to avoid unnecessary contact with other humans. And in some cases, you were trying to use telemedicine and diagnose from afar. But there's always limitations with that.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, in terms of the close relationship you'd have with, say, the owner of the animal, the compassion, the availability to make a contextualized plan, depending on financial limitations or emotional resistance, for example, to something like chemotherapy. So there always will be more nuances with the human element of it, certainly. But from a vet point of view, in terms of like aiding in diagnosis, there's some things that are really coming through the woodwork.
Okay. Dara, thank you very much for being with us. Dara O'Hanlon there, who's a vet with the Topical Vet. If you want to find Dara on social media, that brings...
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.